From Beijing to Berlin, from Singapore to South Carolina, from Cape Town to Canada, the world turns on business and commerce. And where there is such industry, disagreements are bound to happen. Sometimes these disagreements are resolved. For the rest of the time, they end up in the capable hands of professionals around the world. The dynamic and interesting stories of these individuals is what you will hear on this show, Tales of the Tribunal. Welcome back to Tales of the Tribunal with Chris Campbell. I am your host, Chris Campbell, here to tell you another tale, another story from the wide world of international dispute resolution. Though before we get into that, I must say, dear listener, I am flummoxed, flabbergasted, and otherwise surprised that we are already at August 1st of 2019. Where did the time go? How can it be that we only have several months left in the year? In any case, I digress. We have a great show lined up for you today, a fascinating guest, as well as some really interesting information for you at home. So, what I want to tell you about first is an interesting opportunity, an event going on in the major metropolis of Atlanta from September 8th to September 10th of this very same year of 2019. It is the 8th annual Atlas Conference. The topic this year is Points of View, Multiple Perspectives on International Arbitration. Now, I have been to the Atlas Conference on several occasions previously. I've presented in a couple of the sessions that we'll talk about in just a moment. But let's go through the schedule for just a moment. On Sunday the 8th, everything kicks off with a forum and a panel discussion by the ICC Young Arbitrators Forum, co-hosted with the Young Practitioner Group of Atlas. And the topic is how to build a successful international arbitration practice. That's something that our guests have gotten into here on the show, and something that if you're a young practitioner, someone just looking to break into the field, it might behoove you to attend. After that, the show keeps on rolling with the Tertulia sessions that go from 4 to 6 p.m. I will confess, the first time I hosted one of these Tertulia sessions, I had no idea what a Tertulia is. And we'll cover that in the outro of the show. So stay around for after the footnotes to find out what a Tertulia is. But nevertheless, those are, in general, interesting conversations about various topics in international arbitration. Nevertheless, the program continues on Monday the 9th with an address, and the day kicks off with an address by Ambassador Charles Adams. And then that just kind of sets things in motion. There are a number of interesting topics mentioned throughout the day that you can see on the Atlas website. But the real thing, and some will say, Chris, you've buried the lead here, is that at the end of that day's events, there is a fun and special event hosted by none other than the Global Arbitration Review itself. I went to the first event that they did in Atlanta last year. That was a lot of fun with a lot of witty commentary and fun topics to be had. Beyond that, on Tuesday, Atlas will host its first annual Atlas Forum, which is an interactive discussion regarding award writing and various topics in international arbitration. So, again, head over to the Atlas website. If you search Atlas Arbitration in Google, you'll come right to it. And that is what you have there. Let's get to today's guest. Now, if you are on the social medias and you follow anything arbitration related, you are bound, whether that be Twitter or LinkedIn, you are bound to come across today's guest. And in fact, I may have foreshadowed, I definitely did foreshadow her appearance last week, saying that we should get her on the show. I am speaking none other than of Miss Amanda, aka Mandy Lee. So, Amanda is a fantastic lawyer, an accomplished arbitrator, and a tour de force in the world of international dispute resolution and arbitration. She is the woman behind the hashtag Careers in Arbitration, which is an initiative to remove the opaqueness or the mystery around how does one break into the world of international dispute resolution. She started that earlier this year. It's a trending hashtag on LinkedIn and Twitter. You should absolutely follow it if you're looking for that or know someone that is. It's just launched its own LinkedIn page last week. Within the last few weeks, and it already has over 1,000 followers. So get on that, follow that, and I think you will get a lot out of this week's episode. So sit back, stay tuned, get comfortable, and we'll see you on the other side. Welcome to Tales of the Tribunal. I am your host, Chris Campbell, and with me today, I have a guest. During my trip to London, the first of several interviews that I'll be doing here, it is none other than the woman, the legend herself, Miss Amanda Lee. Hey, Amanda, how's it going?
Hey, Chris, thank you very much for the kind introduction.
Awesome. Now, Amanda, you are very active in the world of social media as it pertains to international dispute resolution. Before we get into all of that, we got to cover the basics first. Who are you? Where are you from? What do the people need to know? And what is taking you into that world of social media and dispute resolution? That's a lot. I've been accused of previous guests in the past of asking a lot of questions. Let's start with your introduction. Who are you? Where are you from?
Those are some pretty big questions, Chris. Who am I? Where am I from? Well, I'm from Shrewsbury, or Shrewsbury, depending on the side of the river you originate from. I live in London now. I am an international dispute resolution lawyer. I'm admitted to practice here in England, and I'm admitted to practice in New York as well. And I specialize in different types of international dispute resolution, arbitration, mediation, construction adjudication. If it ends in shun, I've probably done it, basically.
How about school? Where'd you go to school?
I went to school at Aberystwyth University, as it's now known, in Wales.
Okay. And for law school, did you study at one of these ends of court surrounding us here in London, or?
I studied at the University of Law, as it's now known. It used to be the College of Law, and I studied at the Chester campus.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, and I know that it's very contentious here in London, so I want to make sure to identify the right legal institution. So, how did you go from Shrewsbury? Did I get that close? Shrewsbury or
Shrewsbury.
How did you go from Shrewsbury to where you are now?
Well, fairly directly, I suppose. Prior to moving to London in 2008, I worked for the NHS while I was finishing law school, so I did a bit of sort of quasi project management work and some payroll work and some sort of.
And the NHS is?
The NHS is the National Health Service. It's a great thing. It's very expensive, but it's got many benefits. It'll glue you back together again if you break your leg. That's very important.
Right, yeah, sure.
So I ended up in London doing agency paralegal work with Freshfields and Mayor Brown and Clyde & Co., and then I joined my present firm, Seymour's, which is a boutique dispute resolution outfit here in London. I found myself after about a month, the second lawyer on a team for a £90 million fraud and breach of warranty claim, and it was rather like being thrown in at the deep end. So as a trainee solicitor, I was sitting in every high-level strategy meeting for every part of that case, and it was great fun. And I stayed there, basically, and haven't really left since.
They didn't run you off after the £19 million case.
They didn't. They probably tried. They were trying to get rid of me, I think, but I'm very stubborn.
Sure. So that covers, a little snippet of who you are and how you got to be where you are now. What are some things that you're working on now? I mean, either directly with work or just kind of in the space of international dispute resolution?
Well, at the moment, I am handling a few different disputes, several things coming from parts of Latin America, an ICC arbitration, several pieces of litigation in the commercial court here in London, and I'm looking at a Privy Council appeal as well from the Eastern Caribbean, which is great fun.
Okay, so it's actually kind of varied. It's not all in the same lane, necessarily.
Absolutely, yes. I am a litigator by training, I suppose. I've been doing arbitration since the beginning of my career, so I've always done a mixture of both, and I appreciate that each has its benefits and its disadvantages. So they have things they can learn from each other and things that they definitely shouldn't learn from each other as well.
Sure. And how about, so that's what you've got going on in the office, so
Absolutely.
To speak. Okay, and how about extracurricular? What are some of the things that you're working on?
Well, from the international dispute resolution side of things, my latest project is something that I'm calling Careers in Arbitration. I have decided this year to do my very best to make things a little bit easier for those trying to enter our extremely competitive field. And one of the ways in which I'm doing that is effectively by sharing information. I'm trying to level the playing field a little bit and make sure that anyone, anywhere in the world, as long as they've got access to a computer or a cell phone, can find out about vacancies. After all, law firms, institutions should be looking for the best people for the job. That doesn't mean those people are necessarily sitting in that city at that particular moment. So the more the community knows about the opportunities, the better, to my mind.
Okay, so you're sharing information on vacancies. How exactly are you doing that?
I am using LinkedIn, a forum that some people will probably think I live on.
LinkedIn, no, well, so she says that, and that's actually what brought Amanda and I into the same lexicon. It was LinkedIn. It was that we kept running across each other. We thought we might run out and run across each other in the Vsmooth. But no, it was actually ultimately LinkedIn. So this is not a commercial for LinkedIn. They're not sponsoring us yet.
Any day now.
They got two prolific LinkedIn users on an episode. But it was LinkedIn networking in that regard. And we were able to get together for this episode. But so you're sharing this information on LinkedIn.
Absolutely. LinkedIn and Twitter as well. Ultimately, I will be sharing it via different forms. But for now, mindful that I already have an existing network of people who are kind enough to follow me on LinkedIn, I thought, hey, why not give them all some information? So I'm harassing the people in my network who don't wish to know about opportunities, but I'm helping a lot of other people who've been reaching out to me and thanking me, for which I'm really grateful.
Okay, so these are opportunities just in London, or are they all over the world, or where are they?
They're all over the world, basically. I'm trying to be inclusive. I'm trying to be diverse and reflect the diversity of international arbitration as a field. So you can follow the hashtag Careers in Arbitration, and you will see vacancies arising in Romania, in Hungary, in parts of the U.S., in Singapore, in Hong Kong, parts of Africa, in Europe. I'm trying to share a mixture of both internships and opportunities for practitioners, some at the more junior end and some at the more senior end. So there's meant to be something for everybody, basically.
Well, that's great. And I follow your post, and I've been sharing that with colleagues or mentees that are looking. So to save your inbox from getting a whole bunch of ads from this episode, what you can do on LinkedIn, they have this really cool feature similar to what Facebook allows you to do, which is you can find someone's profile, and rather than adding them or trying to friend them directly, you can actually just follow the page. And so, you know, if someone connects with you actually and you know who they are, then that's great. But also they can just follow for the updates. And so what was that hashtag again?
Hashtag is Careers in Arbitration, all one word.
Fantastic. And we will add a show note linking you directly there so that you can stay abreast of all the international dispute resolution opportunities. How about, okay, so that's one project. Do you have any other projects going on at the moment?
I have another project that I'm working on for the future to help aspiring arbitrators. I'm not going to say very much about that at the moment.
Ooh, okay, so this is the teaser. All right.
That's it. This is definitely the teaser. You've had the teaser for Careers in Arbitration, and this is a slight teaser for another project. I guess other than practicing, I'm sitting as an arbitrator as well. That's not really a project so much as something I'm just doing in my professional life, but that's something that increasingly is occupying my time.
And how about outside of ADR? And I know that's quite a bit, right? So you probably don't have a lot of extra spare time. But do you have any other things outside of that?
Outside of ADR, I can't imagine anything outside.
No, blasphemy.
Lucky I'm sitting down; otherwise, I'd have fallen.
Flip the table. Yeah.
What do I do when I'm not dealing with ADR things? It's very hard to say. I dance Argentine tango.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that's
a bit random.
Yeah, no.
I don't think that's a revelation. I think anyone who Googles me will be able to see that, as occasionally it does crop up in professional articles that I do this. I dance Argentine tango. I ride horses. I practice yoga, not as much as I would like, but those are all things that I hope to find more time to do in the future when I'm not focusing on things like ADR and obviously the work I do with arbitral women, which is fantastic and very rewarding, and the work I do with organizations like the Chartered Institute of Arbitrators. I had the pleasure of chairing the young members group for 2 years up to the end of last year. So again, I continue to sort of be involved with those organizations in different capacities.
So you're a busy lady, is what is the idea that I'm getting from that explanation.
I don't sleep enough.
You don't sleep enough.
Luckily, I have insomnia, so hey, it's, you know, it's a bit of a trade-off.
Right, right. Okay. Well, we're coming back to the Argentine tango a little bit later, but... but
must we, Chris?
You can't just slide that in as asking.
I know.
Let me ask you this question, Amanda. Oftentimes, in breaking into the world of international dispute resolution, it requires a helping hand or, you know, some guidance from a more senior person. Do you have, and maybe not just limiting it specifically to arbitration or dispute resolution, do you have any mentors or guides or role models that have kind of helped shape your path?
I suppose starting from the beginning, I've always seen my parents as excellent role models. They both worked extremely hard. My dad worked for the NHS for over 40 years. And my mom worked extremely hard keeping eccentric people like me in line. So she probably deserves a medal, to be frank. So my parents have always been role models, as have my grandparents. My firm, Seymour's, which first employed me as a trainee solicitor, is headed by a partner that I work with. And he is someone who is an expert at out-of-the-box thinking, to use one of those terrible phrases that we should all purge from our vocabulary. And
synergies. Synergies.
Synergies. And so he's someone who has always, I suppose, inspired me to look at problems in different ways, because he's always been very good at looking for alternative ways of resolving situations. The person who's probably been the biggest influence on my professional life is my friend David Phillips QC, whose office we are actually recording this podcast in, and he's one of those people who's always been extremely supportive of me. He's almost effectively been a sponsor for me, I suppose. He's been very kind and supportive, despite me inflicting a great deal of stress on him, particularly when I was studying for things like the New York Bar. So he's definitely made a difference.
Sure, no, and those are, sounds like you had a decent great network, you know, outside of just the traditional arbitration setting. So let's back up, you know, a little bit from arbitration and the legal world specifically. What are you reading that's not arbitration related?
What am I reading? Oh gosh, I'm trying to remember what I'm reading. To be honest, I've developed this habit at the moment of starting to reread books and then putting them down for far too long. I was reading a book on the history of magic.
History of magic, so like abracadabra, or like
much, yeah, abracadabra. I grew up watching, you know, TV shows about magicians, and I ran into this book in a bookstore when I was at Houston, and I was like, I have to own this book, and so I've been reading a book about the history of magic.
Okay.
Again, it's all about misdirection. I think there are lessons to be learned there in advocacy as well. We all have weak parts to our case, and we need to make sure that people don't necessarily focus on those. So
a little bit of sleight of hand.
There's a little bit of sleight of hand in there, maybe. So
fascinating. And okay, going off in that same thread, what kind of music are you listening to, or what kind of music do you like? Are you into?
Well, I obviously like tango music.
Oh yeah, right. You don't say.
You don't say. I like tango music. Obviously, I'm one of these people who, you know, I think music for me kind of stopped around Queen. So I grew up listening to Queen and the Beatles and those kind of things. And
what's your favorite question? We'll Rock You, you know, Another One Bites the Dust.
I can tell you which one I'm going to have played at my funeral, but that would be a bit too morbid for this podcast.
Yeah. Oh my God.
there's so many good ones.
Yeah.
But one of the things I was trying to do as a New Year's resolution this year was learn how to play Bohemian Rhapsody on the piano.
Okay.
I can't play the piano.
New
Year's resolution. I like to come up with a challenging New Year's resolution. So that was
step one: learn to play the piano. Step two:
buy the piano. Buy a piano. Step two: learn to play. Step three: Bohemian Rhapsody. So yeah.
Well, okay, so now we're going to have to either have you back on the show, or we need to see a video or hear the audio of you actually doing this now.
I'm
going to
prove I can do Bohemian Rhapsody.
Galileo said so.
Oh, there you go. I better get on with that then. I'll put that on my mental to-do list.
Yeah. Okay. Here's a question. Well, I suppose we know the answer to it to some extent. So you mentioned yoga and Argentinian tango.
Mm-hmm.
Are those kind of your ways of maintaining your physical and mental balance? Or can you talk about that? I mean, we're such a busy and high volume, high-paced or fast-paced practice area. How do you do that? How do you balance your mental and physical health?
I think it's a really important topic. In the past, I've used things like mindfulness. So I've used mindfulness techniques in order to help me focus on the here and now rather than getting distracted by the inevitable stresses and strains of practice in this field. I'm lucky enough to live opposite Hampstead Heath, which is a huge, great big park. So whenever I'm feeling a little bit overwhelmed, I can just, you know, go and scream in the middle of a park until obviously somebody notices and, you know, stops me. I don't really do that, just in case.
Well, okay, you know, look, no judgment.
Slightly concerned. So I like getting out into nature. If I get really stressed, I go to New York because I find New York to be very, very calming.
Really?
Yeah.
Not more stressful.
New York to me is the only place.
So, mindfulness. Can you tell me a little bit about that? I mean, what are some of those principles like that maybe the listeners could apply for themselves?
That I have used and that I've found to be very, very useful is something called a body scan. And the whole purpose of mindfulness is effectively getting you out of your head and into your body. So it encourages you to sort of feel what's happening in the here and now. So the idea of the body scan is effectively you sit down or you lie down and you focus on the sensations that you feel in different parts of your body. So normally you start with your toes, you work your way all the way up to your head. And at each stage, you focus on the sensations. And if your mind starts to wander, and let's face it, our minds always start to wander, you just gently bring your mind back and you focus on, you know, your left knee or whichever part of your body you'd reached at that point. And it just sort of teaches you to be a little bit more in the moment. And it's one of these techniques that can be really, really cleansing and helps you to sort of get your head back in order. So I definitely recommend giving it a go if you're interested in that sort of relaxation. I've tried general meditation in the past, but meditation can be quite challenging if you're not somebody who, for example, is a regular yoga practitioner and is used to doing it as part of your practice. So a guided mindfulness meditation is a really good place to start, and there are some great apps out there as well that you can use.
Okay. Wow, that's really great, and I think that's something that hopefully listeners can apply maybe in their own mental health hygiene regime. So, stepping one more into the realm of a little bit less than directly related to international dispute resolution, what are you looking forward to in the second half of 2019? Are there anything big that you have coming out that you're looking forward to?
I've got a couple of slightly mad examples. I'm looking forward to taking my dad to see Seinfeld when he comes to London. Those father-daughter things that we do.
Jerome Seinfeld.
That's the one. We haven't seen him in a few years because he hasn't been back in London. So we're gonna go and watch him in a couple of weeks. We do NBA games and we do Seinfeld. These are our father-daughter.
The two critical things.
We go together. In terms of taking a little bit of time out, I'm hoping over the summer to spend some time with one of my friends, Jess, and we're going to go and hopefully ride some of the wonderful horses that were involved in shows like Game of Thrones and Doctor Who. I can't get through a podcast without mentioning Doctor Who, I'm afraid. So,
The Doctor, you mean?
The Doctor, you've got it. Well, the show is Doctor Who, of course. So I'm looking forward to doing some horse riding in the future and getting outside in the, you know, in nature, I suppose, out of the city.
So speaking of Game of Thrones, TV or movies, or any, what was the last movie you saw, or last TV show you followed kind of closely, if any?
I have a tradition of taking my nephews to the cinema every Christmas, so I tend to catch up with the latest Star Wars movie. That tends to be our tradition. So a shout out to John and Andy, who maybe in a few years will be listening to Tales of the Tribunal.
I know I'm sure we'll be syndicated and
absolutely. You know, fame beckons. I can see it now. So the last film I saw was probably a Star Wars film.
No Marvel. You're not an Avengers person.
I'm a big comic book fan.
Okay.
You're getting all the secrets today. I'm a huge comic book fan.
Well, who's your hero? I mean, who are you down with?
I read a lot of Marvel stuff, not as much as I used to. Yeah. I just reread Transmetropolitan over the weekend.
Okay.
Like my Vertigo stuff, lots of Neil Gaiman stuff, and you know, it's like more alternative comic books.
Sure.
So yeah, there you go. That's the last thing I read. Yeah. Transmetropolitan, all 10 volumes.
Oh wow, I mean, you know, very casual.
I was feeling, you know, the need to do so. I read very fast, so that makes life a little bit easier, I guess. So,
fair enough. Well, let me ask you this question. It's, let's say you are approached at a conference or, you know, maybe just out in London somewhere by a recent graduate, you know, student, or maybe someone that's looking to make a transition in their career into the world of international dispute resolution. And they say, look, Mandy, we see your post on LinkedIn and, you know, we're trying to break into this field. How do we do it? What would you tell them?
It's like a normal Tuesday for me.
Yeah. This is not a good hypothetical. It's reality, right?
What would I tell them? It would partly depend on what stage of their career they had reached. If they're still studying, I'd tell them to get the best possible grades they can for a start and to pursue modules that are relevant to the field, so international law, things like that. If they have completed their LLM or they're partway through their LLM, for example, or any other type of study, I would be highlighting the usual things. I would be saying, you need to start building a profile for yourself. So you need to start writing, for example. Articles last longer than speaking engagements. If you're going to start writing, of course, make sure that what you're putting out into the world in perpetuity is really well written. You don't want to be known as someone who's a little bit sloppy on the writing side. So standards are really important when it comes to developing writing skills and publishing. I would be suggesting that they try and get involved with young practitioner organizations. I think this is really important. And not just registering and forgetting that you got involved. Oh, I signed up for that and they send me a newsletter once every now and again and I read the first three headings and then I move on with my life. Volunteer to get involved. When they have a call for new committee members, say, yes, I'm going to reply. There's something I have to give. I could make a difference. I could make a contribution. One of the things I didn't really do at the beginning of my career was say yes to opportunities. I was terrified of public speaking for a start. So any public speaking opportunity, I would run a mile as quickly as humanly possible. So nowadays, if somebody offers you a moderator slot, say thank you very much. You'll probably prepare for it 5 times harder than the people who do it day in and day out. So as a result, you're probably not going to be too bad. It's all about putting the work in. So that's obviously something that is important to do. Make sure that you start attending events and networking. Networking is so important in arbitration. It really is. And most of the people in arbitration, with very limited exceptions, I'm sure, are terribly nice. So if you meet them, they'll be willing to talk to you. I'm not suggesting you write to them, bombard them with emails, and ask them to give you a job, ask them to give you an internship, ask them to be your lifelong friend and mentor. I don't recommend doing that at all. I'm not suggesting anyone's ever done that to me, but I'm certainly not recommending you do that.
Right.
It's really important to follow up with people that you meet. Make sure that you keep in touch. The big tip that I share with everybody is obviously social media. Social media means that wherever you are in the world, you can be in somebody's living room or in, you know, wherever they're in their office, wherever they're looking at their LinkedIn feed or their Twitter feed or other types of social media I'm less familiar with, like Instagram and Facebook.
Sure, right. No, I think those are all fantastic tips. Before we head to the conclusion of the show, you mentioned something about an uneasiness or tension with public speaking. How did you kind of work through that?
I threw myself in at the deep end, basically. I signed up to do the higher rights examinations here in England and Wales. If you're admitted as a solicitor, you have rights of audience in the lower courts, but not in the higher courts. If you want the same rights of audience as a barrister, you have to do further exams. And so I decided that even though I was terrified of public speaking, I was going to go and do those exams. The advocacy part of my law school experience was the most stressful part of it. But I thought, you know what? I'm a big girl now. I'm going to go and I'm going to deal with this fear of public speaking. And so I went off and I passed my higher rights exams. And then I thought, right, okay, I've done this now. So I need to, you know, I need to sort of seize the day. And the next time I saw a call for speakers, I applied and ended up participating in a workshop. And I stood in front of a room of 100 people clutching my sad little piece of paper. And I talked about everybody's favorite topic, disclosure. Ooh. In international arbitration. It was a sexy topic, I can tell you. There were not many jokes. Yeah. Very sad. So that was my sort of my first experience. And after that, I just kept practicing. And the more you do, the easier it gets. And you get to a point where no matter what disaster befalls you, you're probably going to be able to deal with it. I mean, there is a limit to what can go wrong when you're doing public speaking, really. So
that's true. For those of you, I haven't mentioned this on the podcast, but in another life, when I was in college, not that I had a fear of public speaking, but I wanted to get even more comfortable with it. So I had a very fledgling career as a stand-up comedian. Right. So there are videos out there that probably could be found. I won't encourage that.
Send them to me, listeners, please.
But nevertheless, so you think that that investment in getting through and working through your public speaking, that was something that's obviously been an asset to you going forward?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if you cannot stand up in front of a room of people and express your thoughts in a vaguely coherent manner, it's very difficult to build your profile in a field that relies, to at least some extent, on your ability to formulate coherent arguments. People actually being able to see you in front of them is always going to be a useful insight into what you might be like standing in front of a tribunal.
Okay. Well, that's fair enough. So we are now at the end of the show, and this is a question I like to end on. Imagine that it is 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. You have no client issues that you have to get to, no work-related things that you must do. How does Mandy Lee spend the weekend?
Probably say I'd end up sleeping for 2 days, but the insomnia makes that challenging. So what would I do? Well, I would either fly to New York for the weekend, spend 2 days doing the things I like doing in New York, which are really bizarre things like eating vegetable rice in the dining concourse at Grand Central. I appreciate that's a really strange ritual to have, but the first thing I do when I get to New York is I always head straight to Grand Central and start eating this sad little thing of vegetable rice. That's my great recommendation. So I'd probably rush to New York for the weekend, or I'd head up to the Highlands in Scotland, which is fabulous. It's one of those places where it's so quiet it hurts. It's literally painful to be in that much silence. And the more time I spend in London, the more time I wish I could spend in places that were so quiet it hurts, other than New York, for which I make an exception.
That's fair enough. Fair enough. Okay, we've given a couple of shout outs throughout the episode. Do you you want to give those shout outs again, or you want to make some to some other folks, or anybody want to give shout outs to?
Okay, here we go then. I'm going to give a shout out to all of my mentees around the world. You make me have to get better all the time.
You know who you are.
You know who you are. You know who you are. You're making me work hard to be competent, honestly. So a big shout out to all my mentees around the world. Big shout out to all my students at the University of Law. We've just finished a semester, so they're probably delighted that they no longer have to see me every week.
Agonizing over their grades, I'm sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. And a shout out as well to my mom and dad, who will almost certainly listen to this, despite the fact they've been listening to me speak about arbitration for 10 years.
Yeah, sure.
So big shout out to them too.
Okay. Well, fair enough. Thanks for coming by, Mandy. We enjoyed having you on the show. We'll definitely have to get you on the show again next time. We'll include show notes about all the things that we talked about and make sure to send some love your way. You want to sign us off?
Absolutely. I am Amanda Lee, and there is no disputing it. You are listening to Tales of the Tribunal.
Woo! So, if you can't tell, that was an action-packed interview with Mandy. We had a great time, and it seemed like the time just kind of melted off the clock. It went by way too fast. But I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did having it. Mandy was such a great guest. She's full of so much knowledge and so many insights. So this is definitely an episode that I think you could rewind through and get a lot of good tidbits for breaking into the field or just running a successful practice. So to that point, As I mentioned at the outset of the show, you want to check out Careers in Arbitration. That's a hashtag that you can check out both on Twitter and LinkedIn. And speaking of LinkedIn, after talking and receiving feedback from you guys from my query last week, it seems that you guys want to see either a LinkedIn page or on Instagram. So we have to consider that in the next couple of weeks, you know, perhaps at the end of the season or, you know, as we finish up the next week or two. So, as I also promised at the beginning of the show, I will tell you what a tertulia is. A tertulia is traditionally a gathering of people in a bar hall or around drinks at the end of the day or something similar for an informal conversation about topics within a given industry. This is a tradition that raised in the Iberian Peninsula. I quite literally had to Google that the first time that I hosted a tertulia session. So what does it mean with respect to the Atlas Conference that we talked about at the beginning of the episode? That means that there are topics, several topics usually, that you can pick from to take part in a sort of informal way. Now, I know some sessions may or may not have had wine for their discussions. You might want to find those. And then you just talk about various topics in international arbitration. So, again, this is my second plug for the Atlas Conference. Beyond that, I appreciate you tuning in once again. And if you have any comments, suggestions, or other words for the show, if you'll drop us a line at talesofthetribunal@gmail.com, we will get back to you as soon as possible. Nevertheless, thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.